What is up, everyone? Thanks for joining us for episode 123 of the Gamecast. I'm one of your hosts, Kenny, and with me is a special guest, aka one of my favorite writers. Say what's up to Destiny Jackson. How you doing?
Hey, hi. I'm doing well. I'm, Connor's story of Heated Rivalry fame is going to be on SNL tonight. So we're all in celebration. Tonight is also the NAACP's. And then tonight's also the Producer Guild Awards. So there's a lot happening today, but, we're trying to celebrate.
Definitely. Yeah.
How about yourself?
I'm doing well. I'm trying to keep up with all of this madness going on with the awards. And I was even just trying to watch all the films that are nominated and everything. I caught most of them, but there's a few that, are out there that I'm trying to watch. But yeah, it's just been a lot, especially with if anybody's, been in the news or looked at the news. It's been crazy right about now. And so a lot to talk about, definitely a lot to talk about. For the people listening, you might have recognized that Destiny was with us a while ago, actually, on episode 86. And so this is her return, so we're happy to have her. Unfortunately, Tess cannot be with us tonight. Again, with things being so busy, she's moving, and she also had another event that she had to go to. So she will be back, though, next week. So tonight it's just going to be me and Destiny. And like I said, we have a lot to talk about. Before we get to the first topic, though, you were just mentioning Resident Evil 9 and that you were enjoying that.
Yeah, Resident Evil 9, sponsored by Capcom. Just kidding.
Nice.
Capcom sponsor this podcast. Do you hear me? Do you hear me, Capcom? I think Resident Evil 9 just dropped yesterday.
Yes.
And I got an early preview of it, maybe 2 weeks ago. So I'm already done with the game. And I think some other people are finishing this game.
Yes.
In like 2 hours, like 3 hours. And it took me like 16 hours because it is so scary. it's reminiscent of like Resident Evil 7. But it's scarier than that in some ways too, because you have this character, Grace Ashcroft, who's new to the series, but her mom was in a previous game, Resident Evil Outbreak.
Yes.
And then you have Leon S. Kennedy, who's returned and he's hotter than ever. And Grace's portion of the game flip-flops between Grace and Leon, and Grace's part of the game is so frightening. So every time you play her, it's just the most terrifying shit you could ever think of in your life happening to one person.
Right?
If I was Grace, I would have off myself a while ago. I wouldn't have made it. I would have been like, you know what? It's time to, when it's your time to go, I think you should follow that, I think you should go.
Yes, that is Tess's motto. Yep.
Yeah. Shout out to Tess.
Yes. Well, that's
it's dope. Good. It's good. The story is another thing altogether, but obviously I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but I think the story could have been better. But the scares are very good. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I will be checking that out when I get a chance. I have some reviews to do. And I have I'm playing Marathon right now, which has been pretty solid. I can speak a little bit about it because they have the open beta happening right now. And so it's been really fun playing with friends and jumping into the game. I really wish, it looks like the game has the bones for a solid co-op, just cooperative, like story-based game, but it's an extraction shooter. So it's like people, you're fighting other players and stuff like that. And while that's good, because Bungie is really good at making shooters, I'm also like, I see the potential. There's so much here that could be like a really cool single player or cooperative game. Not that I'm hating on extraction shooters. I'm just saying we have a lot of them, and Arc Raiders just, it's not too far ago from Arc Raiders. So I'm like, but so far it's been really fun, and I'm looking forward to the full game. I was sent the code for that. So I'm hopefully, I'm currently pitching a few things right now. So hopefully that comes through, but my week has been busy. This is actually one podcast I've been doing. So have another one to do right after. So yeah, it's been a little busy, but busy is good. Busy is good.
We move. Yeah, that's right. Look, a good productive Black History Month. How about that?
Yes.
Happy
yes.
Black History Month.
So yeah, one of the first topics we wanted to talk about was the Writers Guild strike. Me and Tess spoke about this last week. And how we were just confused about what was happening. Like, how could a writer's guild, like the staff of a writer's guild going on strike right before the Guild goes and have negotiations with the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers. And granted, it's, you know, that's coming up in March 16th, but that's like a week and some change away. And it just seems like an odd thing to do, especially what you represent, right? And so I was looking on Variety, shout out to Gene Maddox over there. And there's a quote that says, the WGA has said that negotiations will go on as usual, even if the staff remains on strike. The Writers Guild staff union, which represents about 2/3 of all WGA West employees, walked out on February 17th. For the people that know, the strike has already started, alleging that the WGA West leadership had failed to bargain in good faith on issues like wage scales and just cause for discipline. The union has warned that the Writers Guild Awards, which is scheduled for the March 8th, could be canceled if a deal is not reached soon. I believe that is already canceled as of right now. I'm not 100% sure, but because they said they had until Friday, which breaking the fourth wall was yesterday, to come back. And they haven't. They're currently picketing. Some of the writers has actually joined them on the picket line, which is really cool, form of solidarity. And so it's just, while this is unwinding, I'm just still baffled at how this could get to this point. Because one of the things I remember reading that the union staff, they wanted better health insurance. That was one of the things, right? And that's always like a, yeah, give them health insurance, right? That seems like an easy thing to do, in terms of like morally, at the very least. I don't know about, you know, the cost of it. And it's ironic because one of the big things that the WGA is negotiating for with the, you know, producers and everything is better health insurance, right? So it's like, I feel like like people can look at them, or the producers can look at them and be like, how are you lobbying for these things if your staff is like, you're not giving, like, you can kind of see where we're at with this. You know what I mean? It's like a weird thing.
It's so bizarre. And I failed economics in school, so it's really hard for me to kind of dig into this. But from what I understand, it's exactly as you read from the Variety thing and exactly how you extrapolate it right now, is that it's infighting. I think that's what people are not really understanding, is that, because initially when the story had broke, and disclaimer, I work for Deadline, you know, so like I know a lot of our writers on staff are covering this situation. So I was basically like between the Netflix Warner Brothers of it all, plus the Paramount stuff, and then the WGA news breaking, I was like, I need articles for dummies, because it and it's like, this is a really good 2 weeks for people who are good at economics and stocks and business and finance. This is your time. This is your time right now. I'm telling you, Destiny Jackson from deadline.com is asking you to write an article for dummies so we can understand this. But when it comes to the WGA, so the union of the inside of the guild is fighting against the guild,
right?
And the rights that they're basically, they're saying, from what, you know, obviously correct me if I'm wrong, but basically the WGA union is saying, hey, guild, you need to fight for better healthcare for us and better pay, and like some other, like, disciplinary demands, I think was one of the things they want. They want better discipline for things that happen, which is interesting to me, because I would love to know, like, specifically what that means to them, because I'm thinking about like Park Chan-wook, who is the director of this year's No Other Choice, but he's also done things in the past. Of course, all his movies are escaping me at this time, but No Other Choice was, I'm like, Decision to Leave, that's one of them. The Old Boy movie. Okay, now my brain's off.
Yes.
But the latest big disciplinary action was Park Chan-wook being stripped of the WGA membership, because they claimed that he was working during the writer strike. Now, he had two projects during the time of the writer strike in 2023, which was The Sympathizer, which was a show on HBO, and he was in the process of making No Other Choice.
Right.
And so they claimed that he was writing when he shouldn't have been.
Right.
And to him, I think his argument for that was, no, I'm like, just I was just like directing some stuff or whatever for no other choice. And I also forget the detail, but there was like, it's a technicality what yes. happened to him. It's a technicality. Because I don't think No Other Choice was even in the picture for like the WGA. Like, I don't even think they right. even had like any cross contamination or anything like that. But yeah. they kicked his ass out. Mm-hmm. And so that was a disciplinary action. And he did appeal. He did try to appeal it. And they said, get out of here. So too bad, so sad. So yeah. It's interesting to me that the union is in fighting with the WGA, and the WGA at large is like, okay, well, y'all do whatever you want to do. We're going to talk to the AMPTP, which is what you mentioned, the Alliance of Motion Pictures, Television, and all that. So I don't know if it's like a, is it something we should agree with? I think everybody should have health care. Right. And as we know, unions like SAG, IATSE, mm-hmm. WGA, they have really good insurance packages.
Right.
That's why, you know, actors are, you know, we've gotten a couple actors these last couple weeks who have said, like, you know, I know one of the Stranger Things actors that plays Max's mom in the series was like, I tried everything I could to get into the latest season so I could keep my health insurance. You yeah. know, we had James Vanderbeek from Dawson's Creek pass away and stuff because he didn't have access to that insurance anymore either. Yep. So we know it's good stuff, but because it's good stuff, it probably costs
yeah.
so much mm-hmm. to keep it. So I agree with that. But I don't think being fractured before the contract negotiations, which, right. like you said, March 16th, is the way to do it. But maybe that's just the only way they thought they had leverage. But it seems like the WGA does not care.
Yeah, they don't seem to yeah. care. And it's because they're, and this is, you know, WGA, I believe, West. So the, it's not.
That's right.
The entire thing. And I think that's why they're able to still operate, because it's not the entire guild but or, right. or union. But it's like, well, what how bad did it have to get to this point? Because I'm sure they had, you know, they had talks, and because I remember it came out that things were breaking down. The talks were breaking down. It wasn't going well. And they were threatening a strike. Mm. And this was a while ago. And it was like, well, you know, guys, we got this big thing coming up. Maybe we should do this, you know, later. And the fact that they want to be there to help the writers and they still decided to strike means that something had to have happened for them to feel that way. You know what I mean? Like, the mm-hmm. timing is just too perfect for this to be a, you know, and I don't think, considering how many people signed up for it, I don't think it's something where we're just, oh, we're going to shake them down because, you know, this big negotiation is coming up. I think it's more so like, we feel that we were wronged in some form or fashion, and
yeah,
we got to get this right. And this is a way to put pressure on them, you know, to kind of come to the table or whatever. It's yeah. interesting to me. And I wish I knew more about what's happening. But it's also the most weird infighting thing that I've seen because it's of what's strange. Happening. You know what I mean? Because of it's like a police officer arresting a police officer and getting mad that he was arrested. Like, it's a weird thing. It's like you're inside of a thing. It's meta. I don't know.
It's totally, it's a Russian nesting doll type, yes, you know what I mean?
Yes.
There's just not enough information yet. I don't think they've made it. They've made like the health plans that they want clear, I think.
But yeah.
They haven't made it like so, like they haven't really released much information about like, okay, what does this mean? What do you want? What do you? So yeah, I do think that there's something larger at play here. But it is very strange infighting. I do still want, I support people who want to get the money, get the bag, whatever you need to do, but it's just very odd timing. I don't know what's going on, guys. I hope you kiss and make up because
yeah,
it's wild. But yes, to be clear though, to everybody listening, and Tess and Ken, brought this up already, but yeah, just to be clear, it's, no, you could still work. Everyone can still work during this time. So it's yes. not like as intense as the 2023.
Yes. The writers situation. can still do their thing and everything.
Yeah.
It's not that.
And the awards, you know, haven't been canceled just yet that I know.
They haven't. Okay. Okay.
But we'll see.
Yeah. They made a comment,
cause they still have time.
Yeah. They were like, yeah. they didn't want people to like basically cross the picket line to get into the awards, which I totally, yeah. like totally understand.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. Hopefully everybody, you know, works things out and fairly works things out, I should say, before this stuff implodes. Yeah. I think one of the other things before we move on, I remember reading was they want to protect us from AI, and that's been a big like to do for everything as of late, whether it's journalism, entertainment, or whatever, what have you, is that we want protections to keep us from we want protections to keep us from losing our jobs potentially, or in some cases, I like in video gaming where people are signing off on their voices and for the voice acting, but then you're not called back because you signed off and you agreed, you got paid well, but now they could just use your voice whenever, and so you kind of don't have that revenue anymore, at least for that particular game. And so it's a big deal. Like I said, hopefully everybody comes to the table and no one's screwed over. Moving on to a big event that happened not too long ago. Everyone should know, or if you haven't known, I'm going to inform you of the BAFTA incident. This is such a touchy subject. And I think that what's interesting to me is how Black people have kind of aligned in their mind. And I want to preface this before I go into what happened. I'm not talking about the extremes. We know the extremes are there, and I don't think we need to focus on those, because people who are logical, or people who are mindful of what's happening and want to be tactful, understand what is happening, or at the very least will look up the like what Tourette's is and stuff like that. They're not going to just make blatant statements, and so we're not going to focus on them. But there is a good conversation to have about what happened. So if you don't know, Michael B. Jordan and Delroy Lindo were at BAFTA, and they were getting ready to present an award. And John Davison, who is he is the subject of the movie I Swear, that was also there to get an award. He has Tourette syndrome, and he's battled this his entire life, and so the movie is based on his life, and so obviously he would be there because he was going to be the actors in the film were going to be are up for awards. And so while they were shooting the show, Alan Cumming, the host, spoke to the audience and said, Davidson has Tourette syndrome, so you might hear a slur or something offensive, and so we just want to let you know and everything. And unfortunately, or I don't, it's different accounts of what happened, but some of the actors said that they weren't told that. The audience was told, but not the actors themselves. And so Michael B. Jordan and Delroy come up. They are getting ready to present. And then Davidson says the N-word. Big commotion. Not there, but online. Big commotion. Because the word wasn't censored. Now, Nick Bullen, the executive producer of the show, said that the team that was editing the broadcast didn't hear the slur, which is weird to me, considering it's on a 2-hour delay, and they edited a bunch of other stuff. It just doesn't.
Didn't hear the slur.
Yeah, they didn't hear it.
He blacked out.
Yeah, it's just they didn't hear it at all, right? And so they blacked didn't do out. They mm-hmm. didn't do it, and so the slur aired for everyone across the planet to hear, and so that turned into a big thing. John Davidson removed himself, and you can tell like Michael B. Jordan and Lindo were standing up there, and they were like kind of taken aback by hearing it. And then they went on, as professionals do. And when they got off stage, I remember Lindo was quoted to say that nobody at BAFTA actually came to them and said, "Hey, we're sorry," or "this is a thing that was happening," or whatever. Like he was like, no one spoke to them at all about what happened. Mm-hmm. And so they're just kind of just like, all right, this is happening. Cool. And so further, I want to say a day later, I'm trying to get the timelines right. The BAFTA came out and the BBC came out and said, we apologize if you were offended, which was like right. a hollow apology. And then Davidson said that he felt bad. He didn't want people to think that that was his belief or like that he was racist or anything. And, that he removed himself and left. And he kind of left it there. And people were upset because they were like, there was no apology from him. And that turned into this big debate on whether he should apologize or not, because he can't control his, you know, he can't control what he says. And later on, we found out that he apparently reached out to them privately. His team reached out to apologize. He also questioned why that apparently there was a microphone seated near him or whatever. So like,
yeah,
people could hear. But Bullen said that the microphone wasn't on. It was just to check this, amplify the sound or whatever from the auditorium. It wasn't necessarily there to monitor what people were saying. And so a whole lot of craziness. And yeah, I am. So I think
I was watching the, like, I was watching the show and listening to you explain this back is just still so fucking bonkers. Yes. Anyway, please continue. Yeah.
So still like, so bonkers. So there was this, you know, so this big debate came about in terms of, yes, we are allowed to be offended, but we have to be we have to be okay with him potentially not apologizing. And the through line for that was, if he apologizes for his Tourette's, he has to apologize all the time. And that was something that was big in his film. I believe his mother said, you don't have to apologize. And she made an example of like saying, if a blind person bumps into someone, would you make them apologize? And so a couple things. I think some of this is based on how you were raised. I know like a lot of black folks, there's some similarities there in terms of, if you cause harm, even inadvertently, that you should try to make amends of that harm. That's just how we were raised. And the idea, like, yeah, what his mother was saying about a blind person, you making them, you know, apologize. I've actually had a blind friend in high school who bumped into people all the time and would always say, I'm sorry. And the person who bumped into them as well would say they're sorry, because they're like, oh, you're blind. Crap. It was my fault. Because just thinking, like, even if it's not my fault, I'm going to say sorry. And I get to the fact that he can't, you know, it's not controlled, or he can't control what he says. Right. And I understand the idea of having to apologize everywhere you go nonstop. However, I do think this might be a special case. Even if you have that stance, I think this might be a special case, considering you said the word to two people at an award show that's broadcasted all over the world. Like, this might be the time you can make, you know,
an exception.
An exception, you know what I mean?
Little, to apologize. A little amendment. Yeah.
Right.
A little,
you know,
amendment to the constitution of, yeah, your condition. I think that this has been analyzed, I feel like, more than the JFK assassination. Okay. Everyone has looked at many angles. Okay, many fucking angles of, yes, this situation. And I think at the end of the day, I think it is complicated. It shouldn't be complicated, but I think it is, for all those things you mentioned, right? Because it's like, okay, but should people really apologize for their disability? And John Davidson's disability is Tourette's, but he also has coprolalia,
yes,
which is a even rarer form of Tourette's syndrome, which causes you to say obscenities.
Right.
And that's the thing that's like, okay, yes, you have this condition. No, it does not mean you're inherently racist. Because if, to put it in layman's terms too, it's like you can't get mad for, okay, let me use this as a specific example. And I know you said we're not going to focus on these people, and I don't want to, because we're smarter than that. But what I don't think people are understanding, we're exposed to many, 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 many words.
Right.
Many, 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 many words. And just because he says the N-word, I get the like knee-jerk reaction to like being like, oh, well, word association, and that means he's racist. Like,
right.
I get that, but like, it's way more complicated than that, because it's like, no, we hear words. And so just think of, your brain has a storage of words it's heard.
Right.
His condition particularly makes him think of any word he's ever heard in his life and to say it.
Yeah, and it picks the bad ones purposefully. Like, it picks the bad ones.
It picks the bad ones.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's a whole other episode, I'm sure, that we can talk about. Like, because that is such a, you know, obviously not to make fun of this guy's condition. That's not where I'm coming from at all. That is just, it's, it's incredible to me that the human mind is, it's so powerful.
Yeah.
That if a single synapsis, your brain chemistry is altered in any way, that it can have, you can have a condition.
Yeah.
That literally makes you do that. You know right. what I mean? Like, that's really wild that it that is. Can happen.
Yeah.
And, but that's the situation that we're in. Right. So right. It's not fair, I think, to expect Michael B. Jordan and Delroy Lindo to not be upset about what happened.
Correct.
When it initially happened on the stage, my first thought, because this is what everybody likes to say and what they said that day when that news broke, was they told everybody. They told everybody. They told everybody. Alan Cumming came out on stage afterward and he told everybody again.
Right.
And it's like, but when you look at that, it does not look like they knew.
Correct. Correct.
And then yeah. I was on Twitter fighting for my life right. because I was like, I don't think they knew.
Yeah. And he says
they knew.
He says it as much. He's like, I wish someone would have told me. Yeah. I wish someone would have told me that this is what this was. Yeah.
The next day I was like, where's everybody at that I was fighting with? Because yeah. I told you, because you can just see their faces deflate, because I feel like if they would have known, not necessarily that their faces wouldn't deflate, because you still don't know that word is probably going to be lobbied at you or whatever.
Right.
But like, I feel like they would have handled it different, or their faces would have been different. It would have been like, shielded. Oh, okay, that's that. Yeah. That's like, oh, that's, you know, that's old Davison. And you know what I mean? Like, so right. it was just like, don't tell me they knew. When it doesn't yeah. look like they knew, but they were professional mm-hmm. and they did what they had to do anyway. So Davidson, he has, like you said, he has apologized more or less. Well, not like, it's not the best apology, but you know, he shouldn't have to apologize for his disability. But in this case, I do think something needs to be in order. But since we were talking about infighting as well mm-hmm. just a moment ago with the WGA, now BAFTA and the BBC are fighting each other.
Yeah, throwing each other under the bus, and you know, we don't know what happened here. It's their fault. And
how did that happen?
Yeah, and because
who had the edit? Who was yeah. eating the sandwich at 3:30 p.m. and forgot to get the N word out the edit?
Right.
Because then here's the tea. Davidson said it came out that he said a homophobic slur during the BBC. During the BAFTA thing, and they cut that out. We still don't know what the slur is. They didn't put it in the articles that I read right. or anything like that. But he said something, and I guess to be fair, like, he was saying things throughout the night,
right?
That were egregious or whatever. But like, they cut those out. They cut those out. They left yep. the N word in. They cut out the
Palestine.
My father's shadow person. Yeah, yeah, they cut out the Palestine thing, and then somebody was asleep when they was on there talking about the N-word.
Yeah.
So what does that mean?
And then like the I want to say Warner Brothers reached out and was like, hey, can you make sure that doesn't get into the broadcast or whatever? So between,
yes.
I don't know the timeline with that, but the way that they're speaking, they spoke to them prior to the 2-hour delay being up or whatever. So I'm like, what happened with all of this, right? I think, yeah, the BBC and BAFTA should definitely get most of the heat. And I personally don't think, like, yeah, with the extremes, with the idea, like, he's not supposed to be there. He shouldn't be there. He shouldn't be allowed to A, B, and C. None of that should be a thing, right? He's a person. We should treat him like a person. Even
Absolutely.
In the way that we speak about, his condition, because he doesn't even want, I believe his community doesn't like the word disabled. So they'll say just their condition. We should treat them with respect. And I have nothing necessarily against him. And even his stance on not apologizing, it wasn't me necessarily being upset with him. It was more so me being upset with or being disappointed and then being upset with the people who are championing it. Because so like there's this thing, and it could be just because we're writers, right? But there's this thing where like people use words and I don't think they understand what they mean fully, right? When you say, would you make someone? Yeah, like would you make someone? No one is making him do anything. Like no one made him leave. No one, you know what I'm saying? No one made him give an apology. or statement. These are all things that he's doing, right? And the idea that you expect something isn't a make thing, right? I feel like the people who are saying that have never been forced to do anything in their life. Like, no one has forced you, physically forced you to do something. And it's weird that you keep putting this up there, like, you know, we're putting him in a headlock to give an apology. I also heard something foolish where they're like, well, Michael B. Jordan and Lindo are privileged. They are privileged because they have money and all this other stuff. And I'm like, you know what's interesting about that idea about them being famous, right? And this makes this worse. And I don't think people understand it. They have heard that word before. They have dealt with that word throughout their life. If they've faced any type of racism before they got to this point, right? You're getting an award at an award show, or you're presenting at an award show. At no point do you think it's going to happen there. Especially if you're not told, right? If you're not told, you don't think it's going to happen there. So the look on their face, to me,
in a room
like,
of your peers.
Right, with your peers.
Yeah.
During Black History Month, it's like,
mm-hmm.
Their face to me was like, oh, and here too? Like, also here, we're going to hear this? Like, this is, we can't escape this, if anything. You know what I mean? Like, that's the disappointment, right? And like the shock and potential embarrassment, right? And so it was hurtful. And, you know, he said it to a couple other people from the Sinners cast, and they said some things, you know, about it. And I understand. I get it. And I think it's a difficult situation, but I don't think it's so difficult that we can't be mindful of everybody. Like, I think people are pushing Black people to you know, aside and being like, just deal with it. Just, you know, put your big, you know, big boy pants on and just deal with the fact that you were called the N-word nationally, like, or internationally, sorry, internationally. Right. You feel
yeah.
me? That's
at any yeah. time. Yeah, really.
That's rough.
I mean, cause it's broadcast everywhere. I think not, sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean
Oh, no, that was, it was, it's, yeah. It's just the idea of like people putting them on a pedestal in a way that means you can't respond. Like because you've made a certain amount of yeah. money, or you're prestigious, or whatever the case may be, that you don't have feelings, you don't feel
you
things,
it.
And you're above whatever yeah. it is. Basically policing how you should feel and how you should react even is terrible. And I think people are doing that when anybody asks for like an apology or expect an apology, it's like, no, you should just get over it. Like you should be fine. It's okay. And I feel like the same way you want to protect John, you should want to protect these men. Yeah.
I couldn't agree with you any more. I mean, again, growing up as a Black person, I really do think people under that get over it stuff is so irritating for many reasons. One,
yes.
because segregation wasn't that long ago. Like, if you really think about that, 1960. Okay, 1964. That's yeah. my parents,
yep.
your parents probably,
yep.
someone else's parents. It's literally barely even a generation ago
yeah.
with the segregation, with racism, with la 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 la, all the stuff, right?
Right.
And it's like, get over it. How can we get over it when we're literally, it's still right behind us on our back, and there's so much systematic oppression that we still deal with
right.
to this day? That's part one. Part two is I don't think people really understand, and by people, I do mean non-Black people, do not understand the things that we do endure that we don't talk about.
Exactly.
And a lot of that, there's been studies on this. Mm-hmm. One just recently came out from in the Washington Post, how internalized racism, things that discrimination, all kinds of stuff that Black people face, causes harm
yes.
to our bodies on the
yes.
inside because we don't express it. Because when we express it, we are like told to shut up, get over it. That's not what that person meant. You
yeah.
know, that kind of thing. Or we're a complainer. Like, oh, you got to make everything political. And it's like, actually, you politicized it by me just being, I'm just existing here.
Right.
And it's already political for you because yes. I'm existing here.
Exactly.
You put a Black person in a video game. Oh, it's don't let the gamers see that shit because then it'll be you're woke.
Yes.
It's
yes.
political. Why is there a Black person in Resident Evil? Oh, Silent Hill.
Yes.
Silent Hill Townfall.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, I have totally gone off awards, but really quick, I'll come back. Silent Hill Townfall. Okay, that's a new game coming out.
Yes.
And it's got a black lead character, and I believe he is in Scotland, which is insane to me, because I'm like, what are black people doing in Scotland? But allegedly they exist there. Who's to say, right? And there's two sides of the internet. One was black Twitter, which was absolutely having a ball laughing, yes, about like, oh, this is Silent Hill Hood, this is Silent Hill N, you, yes, know, all these types of things, right? And they're like, oh, Silent Hill's a brother, you know, give me some dap, right?
Yes.
That kind of thing. And then you have the other psychotic side, which, yes, is like, oh, Silent Hill's woke and there's no black people. Like, why would black people be in Scotland? Like, negative. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And so, anyway, so then we have that. Then let's go back to the privilege thing with Delroy and Michael B. Jordan. Of course they've heard that word.
Yeah,
I'm 32. I've heard that, yeah, word. I think Michael's not that much older than me. And Delroy, you know, he's been around forever. I think he's in his 70s. He's definitely heard that word more than me and Michael probably ever have.
Right.
You know, in a different context too. You know,
exactly,
what I mean? Like, you know, so it's this thing of like, that's what made me so hurt on the internet, is that now we're facing like, these men did not deserve to hear that word in front of their peers. We understand the condition. By,
right,
saying that we're not allowed to feel what we feel, you are protecting that man. And I don't really know how to articulate that any better than you just did, but you're also at the same time undermining our intelligence,
right,
by assuming we don't understand the nuances of the situation.
Yeah.
Now, are there some crazy people who was going a little, I was like, hey, don't say that. That's what the,
right,
group chat is for. Don't say,
right,
that. But I was like, don't say that. That's what the group chat, you know, but we get it. We get,
yeah,
it. Like, there's times when it's just like, okay, this is the last thing I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to, we internalize a lot of the things that we hear. Sometimes it's also just like, people don't realize that people of color also just be like, sometimes people be like, hey, you know, N-word slur or whatever slur they want to throw at you. And you just be like, okay, and you know what I mean? Okay. Like, that's all you got. You going to call me that? That's all you got. Okay. That's whatever. You know what,
right,
I mean? And that's what I feel like this situation could have been had Delroy and Michael known, hey, there's a man, I was just told right before I walked out on stage, they just told me there's a man in the audience. Maybe they were late. Cause also that's the other question though, that's kind of valid to me, I think, that no one's been able to answer, is if they were telling everybody multiple times throughout the night, excuse me, that there was a man with Tourette's in the audience, why didn't Delroy and Michael know? Where,
right,
were they at? Did they show up late? But it's like, it doesn't really matter, because even if they showed up later, they were in the bathroom or wherever it was, they should have been told again, I feel,
right,
like, before they went on stage. But,
yeah,
also, like, nobody can predict that he would say the N-word, of course, like Davidson would say the N-word. But why weren't they told again? Like, you know what I mean? Like, why weren't they told again? If you everybody got failed. Everybody got failed. They got failed, and John got failed too.
Yeah, and it's
so,
like, they did, like,
anyway,
coming up to them later and saying, like, the when he was like, if you're offended in the audience, you know, the host said, you know, if you're offended, and it's like, yeah, they were offended. There was no if about it. And then also, I think,
yeah,
people misunderstand the hard ER of it all. Like, that word came with violence. And I know people don't understand, because they'll say things like, oh, well, what happens if a black person says cracker? I'm like, the level of difference there, it's the magnitude is beyond. I just don't understand how you don't understand. And again, you're not black, so maybe that's why. But history has,
right,
has shown that this word followed, or this, like, violence followed this word. And so hearing that from a white person, however the circumstance, you are immediately tense. You're immediately like, what is going to happen? What is happening because of the history of that word? And then
still
there's also
triggering
the idea that, like, we should get over it. Or the idea, like, it's been so long since fill in the blank. I remember a person that I knew would say something to the effect of, well, back in, you know, when we were in high school, I didn't know that, you know, racism was this prevalent, right? And I would be like, you know what? It's because we didn't talk about it, because we have normalized these things. I remember being in college, and I told this story before, where every time I would go to a specific bookstore in college, I would get followed around. And I never told my parents about it because it was such mm-hmm. a normal thing that I just dealt with it. But that doesn't mean that it wasn't there. So then when it finally boils over because someone crosses a certain line, everyone's like, oh my God, like I didn't know like racism is a thing all of a sudden. Like, no, it's always there. It's just micro, macro. That's, you know.
Yeah, it depends on what you notice. And I think you're right. Again, like, it's just that thing. I mean, I don't want to teach a, you know, 4-hour course in racism. That's also going to be another podcast episode. But you're absolutely right. Like, we all have those shared experiences, and it's so sad. And we have to know. That's the thing that just makes me so freaking mad about this administration not wanting to teach, you know, race studies and all this stuff again, because it's like the big thing is like, you're going to make white children feel bad. Ah, but it's like, as Black kids, we don't really get the option to be free,
right?
Because we're constantly, the man's following us in the store. But of course, right. We know that because he's not following the other white kids in the store. I'm trying to buy a soda, yeah. And he's not. No one else is following a white lady. I had a white friend with me. I was and this is the hard thing too about being a journalist. Sometimes in these white spaces, like sometimes people will be like, "Are you supposed to be here?" And anyway,
yes.
So I had a friend with me in the store, white guy. And he noticed this lady was following me around the fucking store. And he was like, Destiny, you know, like I stopped in the aisle. He was like, Destiny, like this old lady's like following you. And I was like, yeah, I clocked her like 10
right.
minutes ago.
Right.
You know what I mean? And he was just like, oh my God, like I didn't know, you know, that existed. And I'm like, no, it's always there, but your perception is different. And you're just, when you're just living your life and to tie it in even to this hockey thing, which I know, you know, the U.S. men's hockey team, a lot of them are like, you know, we're not political and it doesn't mean that. And it's like, because you're white, when the world doesn't affect you,
yeah,
you don't really care what's going on. And cracker, to back to your point, if I call you a cracker, who still has the good end of the straw at the end of the day? You do. You cracker.
Right. Yes.
You cracker, you have it. The only cracker I love is Cracker Island by the Gorillaz. Okay. I sound like an old man just talking about anything. But if I call you cracker, you still have the end. You still have the better end of the straw. You call me the N word. And that's why we can't even really say it. Right. You can't just, you can say cracker on TV. If we turn on CNN, Anderson Cooper could say, today we're talking about crackers or whatever it is. But Anderson Cooper can't be like, we're talking about it. He can't say that.
Yeah.
He can't say ER. It would be a whole field day. So there's a lot of discrimination tied to that word, whereas crackers, and then there's white trash, trailer park trash. Like, sure, are those slurs, and I'm doing air quotes, are those slurs for the white community? Sure, they're slurs for the white community, but none of them have affected their status and their societal position the way that the N-word has. And
exactly.
So that's what.
So, and the last thing I'll say on that is the person who was like, because they said the N-word a bunch of times in Sinners, that they should be fine with hearing hard ER. Like, fam, I'm praying for you. I'm praying for you, because y'all niggas is crazy. Anyways, the next thing we want
to
talk
about—they love to say that. They love to say, "Oh, Black people love to call each other niggas," and it's like, we do, nigga.
Yeah,
like, so and
it's
yeah.
different. It's different.
We sure do. Yeah,
it's different. Different spelling and everything. Last thing we want to talk about, which I'm super excited for, and we spoke a little bit about it last pod, was the Oscars. Oscars is going to be coming up pretty soon, and I'm looking forward to, well, I'm like Issa Rae. I'm voting for everybody Black. That's just how it is. I'm not a voter for people, so you don't get upset. But I'm rooting for everybody Black, right? And so we have a ton of people, a ton of categories and stuff. I was looking at Best Picture, And I've seen majority of these films. I haven't seen Frankenstein yet. I need to go see that. But I have seen Battle After Another. I've seen Sinners, obviously. I've seen Begonia. So a bunch of these I've seen or whatever. And so I'm curious because, like, obviously Sinners has the most, like, nominations. I don't think they're going to get all of them. I'm hoping they get some of the bigger ones. I hope they get Best Picture because that will be not only will be a first in several ways, but also be a first in horror, which I would be super enamored by. Like, that would be amazing. And I think Ryan deserves it. But I think it's going to go, based on what they're saying, I think it's going to go to One Battle After Another. And I feel a way about that because I think that movie is outside of certain performances and certain scenes. I feel like it's such a mid movie compared to some of these other ones. Ooh. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. Yeah, that whole thing, and I spoke about
that's
that too.
That's a hot take.
That whole thing with Teyana Taylor about, you know, whether or not she was too, you know, sexualized or whatever the case would be. I was like, that was not the problem for me. She was perfectly fine. We're allowed to be whatever we want to be in film. I just think it's mid. I think it started mid and wild. And I think the middle part is like amazing. And then it gets mid at the end. And it's just a mid. It's just mid. I do not like the film. And so the fact that it could win over some of these other films just makes me aggy. But what are some of the films that you think, because I know you've seen, being an awards writer, you've seen best about everything, right?
I do everything but prognosticating. That's somebody, look, like I said, I'm not good at economics. I'm not good at numbers and the counting and the stats, okay? But I have like a good, like, I can say like, oh, I think, you know, this could win because I think, you know, this, that, and the other, but it's like more of like a gut feeling versus like, and a little bit of stats, but it's not like, oh, and so Sinners won at the PGA, DGA, you know, none of that.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
One battle after another, slander. That's so funny.
Yes. I tweeted right when I was watching it. I was like, this can't be.
Did you tweet? Oh my gosh.
I was like, this can't be real. I was like, someone is playing a joke on me. Oh my goodness.
No, that's, you know what? My one battle after another, like to you, is sentimental value to me.
Okay.
Sorry to Norway. Mad respect. I love Frozen. I love Frozen 2. But that Norwegian, so Joachim Trier, he did Worst Person in the World, and which also got some Oscar buzz. And then he did sentimental value. But anyway, so I just thought, I was just like, okay, and like, you got two white, you want to talk about white people, you got two white girl or one white girl, one essential white girl to the plot, right? And she has some daddy issues, which, okay, girl, don't we all in some way? And so, and then like the movie's just kind of like, oh, she's so sad. And then it just kind of ends. And I'm just like, okay, white girl, like, that's fine. Sometimes they're just, like, white movies, you know what I mean? Like, Lady Bird kind of fits into this category for me, where I'm just like, white move, like, okay, white girl, I'm sorry you're sad. Like, that's fine, I guess, whatever. But anyway, I'm surprised, though, because I thought Begonia was kind of mid. So, like, did you like Begonia?
I did. I feel a way, and here's the thing with Begonia, I watched it recently, and so I haven't fully processed it like I did the others. I think I liked it up until the end, and I didn't know it was a remake when I watched it. I didn't know about the previous
Korean
film. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of like,
but I think they're fairly different. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, huh, like this isn't, it's one of those things. Like when I watched, Ready or Not, years ago, I felt like Ready or Not had to end a certain way or it doesn't work as a film. And I feel like this is the same, but unfortunately you can predict it. And so it was like, I think ABC is going to happen. And they're kind of pushing me away from that. And then it happened. And I was like, oh, okay. And so it changed how I felt. I think the performances are great.
Jesse Plemons.
He scares me. I'm not going to hold you. Like,
He's all a the chameleon films he's in everything that he does.
Yes,
yeah,
but like the ones that stick out are the ones.
We both got excited about Jesse.
First, I think he's amazing. He's amazing, right? But I also feel like the films that I see him in where that sticks out the most are the ones where he's potentially a bad guy. And
Yes.
I'm like, you do that too well. Like, you are really good at that. And it freaks me the heck out. But yeah, I feel like their performances was really, really good. And I think that carried a lot of it for me, because it was so slow building up to where the actual tension comes in, that I can understand people being like, it's whatever. But I think the performances during a few key scenes kind of elevated it for me. Similarly to like one battle after another, there's scenes that like it just plummeted after a point. And I think I was just gonna say, I think a lot of these films are, they, because the people in them, there's always gonna be like a really good moment or a really good shot or really good cinematography or something that you can pull from. Yeah. But holistically, I'm like, I don't know if it's best picture though. I don't know.
No, I know we want to wrap on this, so I'll try to be quick about it, but I really like Jesse's performance because he's really good at being nasty in this. Like, he's nasty, like he's dirty, he's nasty, and then it's like, but then he's sad, something happened to him, they don't really explain it, and it's like, you know, so it's kind of like a really layered performance from him. And then Emma Stone, obviously, we, you know, the girl can eat.
Yes.
I kind of want to retire her though, because she's been everywhere in the last couple, just a little bit, like not in the Jennifer Lawrence way, which I don't think Jennifer Lawrence should have disappeared on us like that. Like, whatever people say about her, it's trash, it's garbo, throw it away.
Yes.
But I love her. She shouldn't. Anyway, so Emma Stone, in the sense of, if we had to nominate an Emma Stone performance, I think I didn't like Eddington, but she does something that we've never seen her do before in Eddington. While we haven't seen her, I'll say spoiler warning. Begonia, we've seen her kind of be like a badass, like female, like with autonomy. Like, Poor Things was like, you know, she goes from this like creature to like this woman who starts a sex empire, kind of, in a way. And, but she has autonomy. This one is the same thing, except she, you know, she's like an alien. I kind of find the things similar-ish, but just, throughout her career, though, we've just seen her. She doesn't do anything too extraordinary here, I think is what I'm trying to say.
She has a Denzel Washington thing going.
Kind of, it's just kind of like, okay, like, she's great, but I'm just like, okay, you just won. Have a seat.
Right.
I would have loved to see, you know, Eddington, you know, her anyway, because she just plays this like weird brainwashed woman. So it's like, oh, I haven't seen you do that before. But anyway, I think my pick this year is for Best Picture. I think I am Sinner's Hive.
Yes.
But one battle after another is deeply close.
Yeah.
It's close. And I'm sorry to say, but I love black women. I love them. And anything with Wumi Mosaku in it, is going to get my vote. So, Sinners has my Best Picture vote. I think that we shouldn't underestimate the Academy. A couple years ago, they opened the floodgates for more members. And in doing so, they added more diverse members and younger members, or, you know, just all kinds. And I think that's why we're seeing things like Anora win Best Picture, Poor Things making it in, Sinners making it in, because like horror has been, like you said, notoriously shut out. Amy Madigan for Weapons. Oh, that we would have to do another episode. I don't like Weapons at all. And I have a lot to say about Amy Madigan, but we won't do that. We won't do that today. But Sinners is my pick.
Awesome.
Sinners. Yeah, Sinners is, it's just so good from start to finish. It's funny.
Yes.
It's got horror. It's got the cast is hot as hell.
Yes.
So if anything, I think they also walk away with the casting, which is new to the Oscars this year. I think they walk away with the casting nomination.
Yeah.
I'm hoping original screenplay for Cooper.
Yes. Yes. And the same with I'm pretty sure the I forgot her name. She won this award for Black Panther, for costume design.
Oh, Ruth E. Carter.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm pretty sure they're gonna get that. What do you think about Best Actor and Actress?
Yeah, so Best Actor, I was on the Timothée Chalamet train. Did you see Marnie Supreme?
I have not.
Okay. He's really, really good in that. Timothy Chalamet is another chameleon.
Yes.
Like Jesse Plemons. Timothy has never repeated a role. Never. Yeah. Not once. Yep. From Wonka to Call Me By Your Name to the Bob Dylan movie to whatever, like Marty Supreme, Lady Bird, all of it.
Yeah.
He has not chosen a similar role. He's great, but I think his mouth is getting him in trouble or something like that.
Okay.
And there's been some problems amongst the crew. I won't get too much into it since we're, you know, trying to keep things tight. But so I'm still sticking by Timothy Chalamet.
Okay.
But I think a potential upset. I think a potential upset could be Wagner Moura for the Secret Agent.
Okay.
People have liked Wagner Moura. People like the Secret Agent. I am not one of them, but people allegedly like it. But people like him. So it's Leo, I don't think, has a chance. He hasn't really been winning for that role. And I think that's where the mid comes in, because it's kind of like, yeah, Leo's kind of like a washed up, like, okay, he could have did that in the sleep. You know what I mean? So it's not really anything special, is it? So Timothy, short answer. Best actress, Jesse Buckley. Did you see Hamnet?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Right? Uh-oh.
Yeah. No, it's not bad. It's not bad. It's just like, I want certain people to win.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so it's like,
Who do you want? Who do you want? You want Rose Byrne?
No, I want, or,
because I'm like, is anybody black in that category? I don't think so.
Oh, you know what? Cynthia
Erivo, Wicked is out. People said Wicked for nothing. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
They did not. Wicked for who?
Right.
Not Wicked for me.
Yes.
You want Emma? Is that who you want?
I was thinking Emma.
Not again.
Yeah, and it's different because I think Jesse did a great job.
Don't do it.
But I think that Emma, it's hard because Emma did a great job, but she also is doing her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's kind of tough.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you did better, but you always do that. And so it's like,
yeah,
do you grade on a curve? Like, how do you, that's kind of a, like, I don't know. Like, I feel a way.
Yeah.
And that's
what
I was like.
Have you seen If I Had Legs?
I have not. That's also on my list that I need to watch.
I fear for you. If you had a hard time getting through Hamnet, I would say, If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You is like, it balances the, it's polarizing. Either you really like it or you don't. That's it. There's no in between. Either you really like it or you don't. It, very brief synopsis. It's about a mother who's at her wit's end. Her daughter has an eating disorder. It's a dark comedy, believe it or not. There's a lot of comedy in it. But her daughter has an eating disorder and her daughter is sick. And so on top of dealing with the stress of the kids, she's got stress at work because she's taking care of her daughter. Her husband's not very helpful. And so it's just really polarizing because of the subject matter. And Rose Eats. I mean, I love Rose. I love her in Insidious, you know, Bridesmaids. She's very good in Apple TV's Platonic.
Yeah.
She's been around for a really long time. So I'm okay if Rose takes this, because the conversation this whole season has been between Rose and Jesse. Rose and Jesse, with Jesse winning most of the awards. So if you look at the Golden Globes, the CCA, BAFTA, right? So she's been winning most of the big ones. SAG, we'll see what happens there. That's on Sunday. That's tomorrow. It's tomorrow. So we'll see what happens. Emma, we'll see what happens. Yeah, we'll see. I'll do fingers crossed for you, but I think it's going to be between Jesse and Rose. Kate Hudson and Renata Reinsva, good luck, girls.
Yeah.
Good luck. I don't got nothing for you, and I definitely don't have none for Kate Hudson, so.
Goodness. On that note, we're going to go ahead and wrap the show. Shout out to everybody who listened to us. If you're listening on YouTube, feel free to subscribe, hit that notification bell. If you're up on any of the other platforms, add us to your RSS feed, subscribe. Tell us what you want us to talk about in the comments. We've had a couple of you chime in on the current happenings of the world. And so I wanted to make sure that we add that to the to our topics for this week. I want to thank Destiny for hanging out with me today. Definitely appreciate you. Do you have anything you want to say to people before we bounce? Anything like you're promoting or
Oh man, promoting. I wish. No, I just appreciate you again having me on. You're the only person I've returned to for a podcast, so I appreciate you just asking me because my schedule is so hectic. So I just really deeply appreciate your knowledge and wisdom. Also, a huge fan of your work. You know, I'd be telling you about your game reviews or your movie reviews when I do have the time to sit down and read them and stuff. I had no idea Mortuary was popping off like that, or not popping off actually, but you know, I had no idea. But no, I'm a huge fan. So I love seeing you on the internet whenever I get a chance. No promotions for me. If you want to follow me, I'm at Destiny Dreadful on X and Instagram. And that's pretty much it. I'm gonna be in heated rivalry mode. I'm doing upcoming interviews for that. So you know how that
nice.
Is.
Nice. Yeah. Yes, definitely go check out Destiny's work. She has a really dope interview with the cast of Sinners. You gotta go check that out.
Sinners. And oh, I should promote that. Should I?
Yes, yes.
I'll be talking about white hockey players. Oh no. Help me. Okay, it's Black History Month. Okay, guys, he tapped in. Yes. I did an interview. So go to Deadline. There's a really good interview that I did with the Sinners cast with Ryan B. Johnson. Who is that? Ryan Coogler, Michael B. Jordan, Wumi Masaku, and Delroy Lindo, where I talked to them about the magic of making Sinners. And Delroy and Ryan Coogler, Michael B. Jordan have this excellent talk about Delroy refusing to eat the garlic in the scene. The garlic was not garlic, it was white chocolate. And so there's a funny part in the interview where they talk about how Delroy was like not wanting to eat this white chocolate because it was too sweet. And anyway, it's a fun time. It's a great interview. So go check that out.
Definitely go check that out. Oh man. So again, thanks for hanging out with us, and we hope to see you next time. Until then, y'all take it easy.